Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Cheapers.
Like being in church, and the pastor says, good morning, everyone. The difference is not everyone's sitting in the back row here. I'd like to call the Environmental Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have the minutes before us from February 2nd, 2017. Representative Ugram, would you like to move those minutes, please?
Chair, I would move the minutes of the 17th.
Thank you. Representative Ugram moves the minutes. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor of the minutes as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Those
aye.
Opposed, no. Minutes are approved. By the way, members, a quorum is present here. A little housekeeping first. Really important stuff here. I mean, we've got a couple of minor bills up today, but the really important stuff is Representative Eklund brought some coffee and some cookies, so thank you for that. Representative Metz is tardy for Mr. Fabian's class again. But I was going to mention, and I'll probably forget when he does come in, last week in the hallway he stopped me and said, boy, I bet you all excited for the big game, and I went, yeah. Sure, whatever. And Mountain Iron Buell traveled up to Roseau last Friday evening. I literally got in town just in time to drive up to the school and watch the basketball game between two undefeated teams from Mountain Iron Buell and Roseau. I wouldn't be mentioning this today except for, as you were all, the fact that Roseau did win the game and Representative Metza did pay up on the bet. I sent him a picture as the clock hit zero with the score and said, pay up, baby. So I got a bag of taconite pellets and a bag of soybeans is laying in my office waiting for... before us this morning, Representative Drazkowski has House File 586. And I'd like to move your bill, Representative Drazkowski, to be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I believe that you also have a author's amendment, a technical amendment, and I'd be happy to move that for you as well. That would be the A1 amendment. So, members, on the A1 amendment, all those in favor put this on the bill to get in the shape that the author wants, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, the bill is before us, Representative Drazkowski, in the form that you would like. House File 586, please proceed and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. Members, House File 586 is a bill that is very close to, and I think it might be, well, no, we've had a few slight adjustments from what we had 2 years ago, but this bill passed the House 2 years ago as part of the House Tax Omnibus Bill, and what it does is recognizes, since we have seen a large amount of infusion of land purchases within the policy here in state government, especially from the legacy bill. As we know, the legacy bill was passed in 2008 with 55.99% of the vote to restore, protect, and enhance our natural resources. And since then, as we've noticed, a large amount of the legacy dollars has been used for land purchases. One of the things that two things weren't contemplated. One thing that wasn't contemplated, I don't think, is that such a large amount of the legacy dollars would be used to buy land. And then I think the other thing when people voted is they didn't suspect or expect that the passage of that amendment would incur upon them potential increases in either property taxes or income and sales taxes through the funding of PILT for these lands, or, as I mentioned, the increase in property taxes that normally happens to people around a particular parcel when it is taken out of the private sector and placed into an exempt government ownership. So what this bill does, and I'll have Ms. Dalton, if I could, Mr. Chair, walk through the bill, but what it does is sets aside the necessary amount to pay for the property taxes for the local land land using land, I can't remember the correct term here we've got in the bill, but for units, local use of government that deal with the maintenance and access, et cetera, to those lands, and that would include counties, townships, some of the special districts, et cetera, does not include schools. But what this would do is provide that there is enough money set aside, not only from the legacy dollars, but also from LCCMR, that's set aside to fund into perpetuity the funds necessary to pay the property taxes on each of those parcels going forward after enactment of this bill on July 1st, I think is what we say in the bill, July 1st of 2017. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over to Ms. Dalton.
Sure. And just before you get started, Ms. Dalton, I do want to know, let the committee know that we do have two bills before us today. We'd like to try to get this one wrapped up as soon after 9 o'clock as possible so that we can get to Representative Ubin's bill as well. So keep that in mind. Ms. Dalton, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and I'm going to take you very briefly through the bill summary. The first section of the bill summary essentially establishes a county fund that will be managed by the State Board of Investment. The commissioner of MMB will be putting the money that is allocated for these in perpetuity payments from these funds into the investment account, and then the Department of Revenue, the Commissioner of Revenue, will be the one who is responsible for working with the counties to figure out how much needs to come out of that fund each year to make those in-lieu property tax payments on this land. Sections 5 through 10 deal with the Environmental and Natural Resource Fund, and then sections 10 to 14 deal with sections 2 to 4 deal with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, sections 5 to 10 deal with the Environmental and Natural Resource Fund. There's a lot of very just mirrored language, so I'm just going to talk about it once. Basically, what it says is that beginning with lands purchased on or after July 1, 2017, the bill requires a one-time payment, which will go into this SBI account, equal to 30 times the property tax assessed by local governments providing land-related services. Local governments providing land-related services are counties, towns, cities, and a very few special taxing districts, basically watershed districts and sewer and sanitation districts. The amount that's going in will be 30 times the property tax assessed by the local governments at the time of the purchase. The funds are invested. This account is used to compensate the local governments who provide land-related services for lost property taxes in perpetuity. The 30 times the existing property taxes was calculated based on some very conservative estimates in growth in property taxes and fairly conservative to liberal estimates on returns on investment, and if you want to go into that, we can. The one-time trust fund payment on lands is prorated. So if 25% of a land acquisition is funded from money from the legacy fund, then only 25% of the land is using the value of the land is used in calculating this compensation, and that's what goes in. The other remaining 75% of the land would remain outside of that and would still get regular PIL payments, just like any land bought with general fund money or other sources that would come off the tax road. So basically, if you purchase a piece of land, 25% would not be eligible for regular PILs, and the other 75 would. I wasn't planning on doing this, so I'm a little confused. If any land receiving a one-time payment under the program is later resold and put back on the tax rolls, the money that was put into that SBI account for the counties would be taken back out and redistributed back to the fund to be used again. One thing that is probably pretty important to note is that there is a restriction in Section 4 of the bill, and then for one fund, and then I forget where the other restriction is. But basically it says that if part of the, if the payment of this tax, of this, let me start again. I'm doing very bad. 8 o'clock in the morning is not my best time. Basically, it prohibits the state from using money from the two funds to acquire land if the provision for the one-time county trust fund payment is found to be unconstitutional. So that is an important part of this bill. And then Section 10, no, I'm sorry, Sections 11, 12, and 13 are basically the ones that basically say the lands that are purchased with this are no longer subject to PILT payments. Section 14 allows for the annual withdrawals of the funds from this county joint trust fund. Basically, the amount of withdrawal any year is limited to the amount needed to actually pay the property taxes for these property, these land-based local government property taxes, or 5.5% of the fund. So, in other words, there's a limit. If there's too much, if the property taxes exceed what the fund can keep making payments on, then all the property taxes are prorated. But this is to ensure that the fund actually does provide payments in perpetuity. And then the local governments are required to use the property taxes that they the payments that they receive under this as an in lieu of property taxes for the following land-related services: roads and bridges and trails, public safety and emergency response services, environmental recreational resource development and management, and other similar costs. And with that, Mr. Chair, that's my very bad explanation of the bill.
I just thank you. And in Section 4, I need a little clarity on the summary. It talks about the money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Then you talk about an unconstitutional provision in there. I'm looking in Section 4. Am I missing LCCMR, or is that expressly left out of that section? Representative Drazkowski.
And, Mr. Chair, the LCCMR part is later in the bill, and it says the same thing for LCCMR.
Okay. Yep. Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, say the state purchases a piece of land under one of these funds for a trail section. That, it looks to me like that would then fall under this bill. Am I correct about that?
Representative Drazkowski.
Yes, I believe it would, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius.
Representative Wagenius.
Do we pay PILT on other trail sections that are purchased just with general fund or bonding dollars?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, anything that comes off the tax rolls and is considered acquired natural resource land, we make PILT payments on.
Representative Hank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I've been looking through the bill and trying to find where the money comes from. There's a lot of language about where the money goes for the trust, but it doesn't appear to be explicit that, and I'm assuming, but I'm not clear on this, is there money deposited from the Outdoor Heritage Fund into this special trust account? And if so, how much is that per year?
Representative Drazkowski or Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Section 3 of the bill actually establishes the fund and requires the Commissioner of MMB to credit money to the account from the Outdoor Heritage Trust Fund. So it's there. There is another section, and I always have trouble finding it because the two sections of law, one is written in subdivisions and one is written in sections, so it's sometimes a little confusing. But there is similar provision for the other fund as well.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Ms. Dalton, so we create an account in the Special Revenue Fund, and then we, and I'm using we here as the state, then take money out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and deposit it into the account, and then that special account would be used to reimburse the counties. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, Section 1 actually requires that the right now it says Commissioner of Revenue. It should actually say the Commissioner of Management and Budget takes those funds and deposits it with the State Board of Investment, and they manage and invest the fund, and then the Commissioner of Revenue takes funds out of that account annually to make the payments to the counties.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is the revenue that's taken from the account essentially the principal, or is it the revenue that's raised from the State Board of Investment?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the amount that's being put in, which is 30 times the current property tax payment, was actually calculated so it could be, it would essentially fund a what's called a perpetuity, so it could continue to make these payments every year in perpetuity without running out, which is also why there is a limit on the amount that the maximum amount that can come out of the fund. So the maximum amount that can come out of the fund in any given year is 5.5% to basically ensure that if you have a bad investment year, there isn't a you aren't going to take out so much money that you're going to make it hard to pay make your payments in future years.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we're, I think the bill, the next bill is about $115 million in annual expenditures, we would be taking 7, 8, 9% as it grows out of the fund for these tax payments?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, it would depend on... Are you saying there's that much money being used to purchase land?
Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. The 115, I think, this year is the total amount, of which some of that is restoration or enhancement rather than acquisition. So I was using that as a broad figure because over the life of the Outdoor Heritage Fund, it's going to continue to climb as the sales tax revenue increases. So let's for just sake say hypothetical, you have $100 million of acquisition in the bill, which is more rich than the bill, I think, has. So we're not talking $50 million. We're talking maybe $7 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, this will normally be assessed as agricultural land. So it's agricultural land is assessed at 1% of its value. So you would take 1% of the value that you'd paid, and then you would multiply that by the tax rate. Tax rates, I believe, in rural districts are right around 100 to 150%. I'm doing that right off the top of my head without having the numbers actually here. So 1% of the value times 1.5 should give you roughly how much money that would need to be gone, times 30. That would be the property tax, and then you would multiply that by 30 to figure out how much.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that would be if it's agricultural land, but if it's forest land or wasteland, it would be a different rate.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I believe most of this land is going to be right at the 1% rate. Actually, if they purchase homestead, homesteaded farmland for any reason, that will actually be at a 0.5% rate. So it kind of depends, but most of the rural undeveloped land is at the 1% rate.
Richard Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one other question on a different topic, and that's on the Section 4 that you raised and the subsequent LCCMR section. So It looks like this is just a prohibition on purchasing the state, so I'm assuming this, when it says the state, that may mean the Department of Natural Resources, that the Department of Natural Resources could not buy the land from, let's say, nonprofit X. But that nonprofit X could buy the land with the fund and give it to the Department of Natural Resources. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at. I need, can you re-ask the question?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we look at 4.21, 4.22, 4.23, the state may not use money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund to acquire in fee simple, in whole, or in any part of the land subject to property taxes, or any land owned by a nonprofit that was subject to property taxes before the land's acquisition to a nonprofit. If it's void and if there's not funds in the my question is on those first three lines, separate from the trust fund being created, is there a prohibition on purchasing? So if the trust fund isn't there, are you saying, is maybe this is a question for Representative Raskowski, that you can't buy the land? The state, the Department of Natural Resources, cannot buy the land from a nonprofit if the nonprofit has purchased it from a private owner where the private owner is paying property taxes.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen. Yes, it covers both situations where the Heritage Fund would buy it in fee simple, and also puts a provision in there because sometimes we know that nonprofit organizations buy land and then potentially sell it as well. So it covers both of those situations where it's either bought from an individual or through a nonprofit.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm hoping Ms. Dalton can answer this. So for me, when I see the word unconstitutional, that piques my interest. And so I'm wondering, when the constitutionality is potentially called into question, it makes me want to ask the people who've been trained and spend time studying the constitutionality of things. And so basically I'm wondering if the Attorney General has weighed in at all regarding this issue.
Representative Draskowski or Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker Finn, we did have some discussions about that, but I think Mr. Sulem's prepared the best answer.
Mr. Sulem, please state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem, General Counsel and Director of Governmental Relations for the Minnesota Association of Townships. Our representative, as far as the AG weighing in, there has not been an opinion issued. What there is a misused letter that starts off by saying, "This is not an opinion." Why? Because the Attorney General does not issue hypothetical opinions. The letter goes on to do two types of analysis. One saying, if you take this approach, the courts may find it unconstitutional. If you take another approach, they may find it constitutional. So the AG simply said it could go either way depending on how things are structured. The way that we have structured this, we believe it is absolutely constitutional. It is supplementing the existing PILT fund. Is proportional to existing PILT funds. It is not supplanting in any way. It is part, if acquisition is allowed from the trust funds, then the cost of said acquisitions would also go along with it. This is no different than, say, the closing fees for the acquisition. This is part of the cost, and that's what we're really trying to get to, is what is the true cost of land acquisition, and how do you keep the locals whole? So with the way this is structured, we strongly believe it's constitutional.
So setting aside your judgment that the letter's been misused, do we have a copy of that letter so that we could see what the AG has weighed in?
Right. We're digging through our stuff, Mr. Chair.
Keep digging.
Okay. I'd appreciate that if we could get a copy.
Representative Metzler, and by the way, Representative Metzler, you were tardy and I talked about the basketball game. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you said I'm a man of my word and that you got your $5 yesterday.
Well, I thought with the bag of tack and I'd come up.
Well, okay. That's how we just move a few pennies around, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this question is for Ms. Dalton. So if we had 1 acre of land and say hypothetically it's valued at $4,000, we'd take 4,000 times 0.001 and then multiply that times 1.5 times 30 then, and so it'd be about $180 annually in a payment, or would it, or in a one-time payment rather?
Mr. Representative Metza, I believe if you multiplied it by 0.001, you multiplied it by 0.1%. It's 0.01.
Well, 1,800.
Representative.
Yes.
Perfect. I'd just like to quickly check and see if Matt Hogard or Dan Larson would like to testify.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Sewell? Our plan had been that I was being walked through the base testimony, then Mr. Hendon was going to follow up with the county specific. That'd be all right.
Okay, that'd be fine. Yep. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members?
Mr. Sewell, yep. Proceed.
You've heard from Ms. Dalton what the bill does from a technical perspective. I want to get into a little more of what the bill does in terms of its intent, what it solves, problems we're addressing. And primarily what it does is it provides more stability to the process where counties and townships are made whole. They're reimbursed for the lost taxes, allowance acquired by the state, and removed from the tax rolls. When land is acquired, it doesn't mean that it stops being used. In fact, in many situations, the land is used more heavily after acquisition because it's set up as a state-designated site for whatever the purpose is. That means that we have local road expenses that continue and may actually be enhanced. There are 911 issues that are involved in terms of police and search and rescue and things like that that are on a regular basis. And so the local costs remain when that land is acquired. And so the attempt is to make sure that we are kept whole. Current payments were increased in 2013 after some legislation in 2012, and that has helped, but it has not gotten us to a true dollar-for-dollar replacement for most units, particularly at the township level. How does this process actually work? Well, as you heard, it's removing the general fund obligations by creating this pay-as-you-go approach. And we developed this in consultation with the State Board of Investments, that if you take that rate at 30 years times the tax rate, the interest should be sufficient to be self-perpetuating, knowing that investments are always, you know, especially in the early days, you have some ups and downs. We have put the safety cap of 5.5% of the principal as the max withdrawal, again, by the recommendations given to us in conversations with the State Board of Investments. And so what we have is the source of revenue that will be there. It's appropriated, so it's to the counties. The counties work without work through the normal property tax process to get the money down to the townships. Because it's already been appropriated, it's not a fund that's now subject to rating in case of state shortfalls. This is local government money as soon as the appropriation is made. As I said, the interest rates make the self-perpetuating fund that will support the property tax withdrawals on an annual basis. So we have that certainty that money is going to be there. We're not subject to long-time freezes as has happened in Philp. We're not subject to the payments not being adjusted for inflation and suddenly the value dropping dramatically. I'm sure some of you have been told or may hear later that there are all these counties being wealthy off of PILT because they gain more money on PILT than they do from the property tax. I don't think you find many counties that are lining up for taking more land off the tax rolls. We have several counties that are 80-85% non-taxable in many areas. Now take that fact and look at the township level where 75% property tax dependent. If you're 75% property tax dependent and 85% non-taxable, you're shifting a heavy burden onto those remaining homeowners. And this bill addresses that by taking it off the property tax and creating the supplemental fund the payment as you go. It is a process, as I said, that is constitutional in our opinion. We've set it up as a supplement to the current PILT. The current PILT program does not go away. Lands that are under PILT continue to get PILT. Land under the new acquisitions are prorated, as you heard, as to PILT payment versus the trust fund account. It is not supplanting in any way. If you're going to argue this is somehow supplanting the PILT process, then the acquisition themselves have to come into question, because prior to the legacy funds, all lands were acquired using general fund appropriations. And so what if you're arguing that we can use the legacy funds to enhance our acquisition, then that same argument is what we're saying. It covers the acquisition costs. You can't separate the two and say, well, works for one and not the other. It's either a constitutional effort or it's not, in terms of supplementing our existing funding options. Nowhere in the constitutional amendment itself do you actually see acquisition. It talks about, you know, enhancing, protecting, et cetera. And so that's what we're working on here, is saying, all right, if that's part of the effort, then you need to cover the entire expenses involved. As I said earlier, it's no different than you'd be paying the closing costs for the acquisitions. I do want to acknowledge that we had a conversation with the State Board of Investments yesterday, and that in the tax committee we may have a couple of minor tweaks to make sure that we are following the protocol. The State Board of Investment is there to actually do the fund management, but we have to set the priorities as far as what the investments will be, and there's some language they have recommended, but that is to remain for the tax committee. But I promised that I would acknowledge that we are looking at that language for the next stop. In short, this bill is very straightforward. It creates this account that holds us harmless, keeps the property taxes stable, because we're not adding more burden to them, and we're also not adding burden to the general fund. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Johnson, C.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question relates to the comment made by Ms. Dalton, but it relates to what you're talking about too, Mr. Silverman, and that is, this is assumes a certain return on the investment, and when it's lower, when the markets are down, and it does not, it's not sufficient. The fund is protected, but how are the PILT payments made in that situation? Where would the money come from to cover that shortfall?
Mr. Sewell.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what would happen is if there's not enough money in the account, you know, had it down year, the cap would kick in, the safety valve for protecting the principal would kick in, and then the payments down to the locals would be prorated based on the percentage that was available for withdrawal. And that's how we do it currently.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding would be in that situation, the county would then, or the local government units, could see a significant drop in their PILT payments for that year. And is that how I understand that?
Mr. Representative Raskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. I think that's correct, Representative. We have used the best calculations we can put together to set the structure about for this bill. If it does need to be revisited in the future and tweaked, if we have a downtime, a future legislature may need to come back and say, you know what, we need a little bit more money in order to work here going forward. But there's been a lot of effort in the last 3 years put into this bill, and so I suspect we're pretty close.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the effort. I really do. And I appreciate the challenge with the PILT. I've been hearing about this for 4 years. But I also got to appreciate the challenge to county, to local units of government. In times of a down market, it's also in times of a down state budget. And there's already other pressures on local governments, especially in rural Minnesota. And it seems like a tense situation could result in there. And I don't know if there's a way to protect that, but I think it merits some look. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I answer that?
Mr. Stewart.
Mr. Chair, yes, there is the potential, and our members are aware that, you know, there may be a situation. But again, based on the averaging and the amount that's going into the principal, the 30-year payment, we believe that risk is fairly low. It's at the most, it's no more of a risk than we have when the state faces the major shortfall and now the general fund is not available for PILT. General funds freeze payments. General funds are reduced. Those are all threats that have happened in the past half dozen years that I've been working on this issue. And so there's a risk either way. We believe, based on the research we've done, that we're actually a lesser risk to doing the pooled account.
Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. The question I had is this bill, I was under the impression it was to make the local government whole for any loss on the tax roll. Is there anything in here other than the financial that would restrict a nonprofit or the DNR or legacy, anybody from purchasing land at face? Special groups to jump through. I don't have a problem with making the counties whole financially, but what I was wondering, are there any special hoops or restrictions that's going to run people through in buying land initially?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cornish. Representative Cornish, generally no, with the exception of that situation we talked about earlier, if the provisions are determined to be unconstitutional, then it would relate back to those provisions that provide limits generally for, you read that, and it's in 2 points in the bill, both in the legacy section and the LCCMR section. Other than that, if it's not ever determined to be unconstitutional, absolutely none.
Representative Cornish.
Good.
Okay. Representative Hansen. Mr. Meyer, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of following up on Representative Cornish's question and your earlier inquiry, I think the Section 4 and the LCCR ones are the two pieces that it would be good to get some third-party analysis on those, on what they actually mean. But saying that, Mr. Chair and Mr. Sulem, you know, having looked at similar bills over the years, I think you're pretty close. That this is, the question that I've raised before is when people voted, I don't think they were voting about for paying for property taxes. However, it appears the way you have this written is that you're considering these costs as part of the cost of the transaction, which is a different statement rather than as you vote to raise your taxes, you're voting to pay somebody else's taxes. So I think kind of in contrast to where we've been before on these, this is creative and unique and appears to meet the a lot of the concerns that we've heard over the few years, but not, and I think my earlier estimate on numbers was off on the high side in terms of what the dollars would be. So I do want to ask Representative Drazkowski, there's nothing in here that prohibits if there was land that's purchased in the metro area or in metro or in regional centers that those counties would not be eligible. This would be every county in the state, every jurisdiction that would be applicable, not just some. Is that correct?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. That is correct. That's my understanding of the bill. Schools are not included in this bill, and we talked with schools over the last couple of years, and they didn't necessarily need or want to be included because there wasn't that much of an impact for them.
And then finally, Mr. Chair, hopefully we have some people to provide some commentary on it, if not during the hearing, but at least some independent evaluation of it.
Thank you. I'd like Mr. Meyer to come down. We're going to try to move things along here a little bit. We'll get to you yet, Mr. Hildegard, possibly. Oh, Representative Metza, did you have a...
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. In St. Louis County, we have a lot of tax-forfeited land already, as many of the members in committee know, and I think this is definitely a step in the right direction. So I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The bill, I think, was covered pretty well, and the fact that it doesn't fund the school districts, and if they're okay with it, that's a great thing to hear. One of the concerns, I think, that people should be aware of. It will limit the spending ability of those funds that the counties receive or the local units of government just on those land-related costs. For example, Coochie County, Lake Woods County, counties who get a lot of PILT money, Bill Tammy, they use it for other general levy operating expenditures. This would prohibit that to happen, and you'd only be able to spend those dollars you receive for the PILT payment on land-related costs. So just to make sure people are aware of that. The other thing I want to make people aware of, you should have a report in your packet that the Department of the Executive Branch was required to study this analysis and also several other alternatives to payment in lieu of taxes. If you go to the executive summary on page 5, page Roman numeral 5 there under the recommendations, and this comes from Commissioner Meyer in France, Department of Minnesota Management and Budget. So after consulting with the DNR and revenue counties and townships, Commissioner Management and Budget recommends no changes to the current PILT system for the three primary reasons. The current mechanism for funding PILT is one of the most stable in state government. It's actually an open appropriation that is forecasted for growth and budgeted for growth. The PILT program is not unique among general purpose local aids or other state programs. The alternatives do not sufficiently exceed the current program's administrative efficiency and long-term financial stability to warrant a change. What's going to happen under this bill is that the counties are going to be required to carry two sets of books. You're going to have to carry an assessed value sheet or ledger for your natural resource acquired land, and then you will need to carry a ledger that you'll have to do appraisals and assessment work on these other Outdoor Heritage Fund and Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund lands. Submit that information to the Department of Revenue and then get a payment out of that pot of money, so to speak. So it's going to create more work and more confusion for the county assessors at that level. We spent a lot of time this past year working with the county assessors as it was the reappraisal period once every 6 years. And there was a lot of confusion amongst the assessors at how to appraise these lands. They aren't all classified as agricultural lands. They're all appraised differently most times as wasteland or recreational land, depending on what kind of land we have. So that's going to be a problem out there. It's going to have a fiscal note. There's going to need to be some reprogramming done to our lands record system, as the data will be reported to the DNR. Then we submit it to Revenue, who will submit the information to the State Board of Investment and get that payment out. So in a time when I think people are interested in creating less government and making things more efficient, this is actually going to make things more complicated and create more confusion that's out there. Stability, I don't know about the stability part. As Mr. Sulem testified, as we heard, the fund might not have enough money. It would be less money than would be appropriated less at that cap. And actually, PILT is 0.75% of the purchase price. So we're talking assessed value here. And many times the assessed value, even though current statute says it has to be looked at every 3 years and it has to be within 90% of the actual value of land, we often find that the assessed value and the sale of land price are two different things. If you buy a house, your appraisal is going to be more than your assessed value, and oftentimes that purchase price is more than the appraised value. So I don't know if it's in the best interest or you're using the right numbers there. And Mr. Chairman, this lastly, the DNR presents our proposals to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, but the legislature also has a lot of appetite for acquisition, it looks like, this year on trails, particularly Voyageurs, Prospectors, Blufflands, Cuyuna, Mesabi, Gitchgami, Fairburn County Regional Trail Connections, the Casey Jones Trail, Sioux Line Trail, Northwoods Trail, Milltown State Trail, Root River State Trail. These are all bonding proposals that members have offered that are not in the DNR's plan or priority for the most part, but there are a lot of acquisitions that are moving out there that people do want to do. So I just want to bring that to your attention as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you be more specific on what land is proposed to be purchased with the bonding proposal on the Cuyuna Rec area?
Mr. Chairman, we're looking at trust fund lands, I think, dealing with those lands that are there and trying to do some work there.
Okay, who do those lands belong to? I'm just really disappointed in that last statement you made, Mr. Meyer, because at least that bonding proposal I'm very familiar with, and the idea that is going to go out and take a private property off the tax rolls is just flat wrong. So let's be just a little more straightforward in those broad general statements. Thank you.
Representative Hamps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the best way to get an independent analysis is to have a fiscal note, so I would ask formally ask for a fiscal note on the bill.
Thank you. Lance Nest, you're next. Quickly, please. Mr. Nest, identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, president of Anglers for Habitat, vice president of the Minnesota Conservation Federation. We come before you to oppose the bill today. We're very concerned about some of the language in the bill. But I would, I think, I'd just like to read from the Attorney General's statement that was just handed out. Beginning July 1st, 2009, until July 30th, 2034, the sales and use tax rate shall be increased by 0.3% on sales and uses taxable under the general state sales and use tax law. Receipts from the increase plus penalties, interest and reduced by any refunds are dedicated for the, for the benefit of Minnesotans. To the following funds, 33% of the receipts shall be deposited in the Outdoor Heritage Fund and be spent only to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. The money dedicated under the section shall be appropriated by law. The dedicated money under this section must be supplemental. Traditional sources for funding for these purposes may not be used as a substitute. We debated this for many years to get this law passed and before the citizens of the state. It was passed by over 70-some percent. By constitutional amendment, it actually had more votes than President Obama had at that time when he ran for office. We're also concerned about Section Subdivision 5, the state acquisition portion. I hope members understand that the way I read this, you're basically going to put out of business Pheasants Forever, Lex Unlimited, the Nature Conservancy, and about a dozen other conservation groups. That is, a lot of their purpose is to buy and purchase land and keep it in perpetuity. And they give it a lot of times, donate it to the DNR. So I hope that members realize this is a very controversial section in the bill. I'll conclude. I was told to keep my marks short, so I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Johnson B. is in boy. Brian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was interesting that he was reading what the constitutional amendment said. One of the key words he said was maintain. But one word I never heard was acquisition or acquiring more land. I believe that fund was set up to maintain the current land that we have and not keep purchasing more. Well, we're getting to the point where DNR cannot maintain the land that they have, but like was said earlier, we're buying more land. I think we need to take a real good look at what that constitutional amendment really was to be done.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Representative Guskowski, I hear where you're coming from, and I'm just trying to think about, are there going to be any unintended consequences of approaching this way? And one of the things I'm thinking about is so instead of having the state purchase land or somebody purchase land and giving it to the state, a group like Nature Conservancy purchases the land and keeps the land. So they're probably paying property taxes, which solves your property taxes problem, but then they may not let people hunt on it. And that is where I'm having some, when we know that the hunters and fisher folks were integral to passing the constitutional amendment, is there an unintended consequence there?
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. I'm trying to understand your question better, Representative, but I think the potential with which you are expressing here exists regardless of whether the legacy amendment is in effect or whether or prior to the legacy amendment actually being passed, you would have the same same dynamic, same question, same concern. Maybe I don't understand your question correctly.
Representative Lavigne, yes.
No, I'm actually thinking of the legacy money now, the LOHC money. Now, instead of going to the state or to Pheasants Forever that will give the money, give the land to the state, I'm assuming that's covered by this bill. So instead of that happening now, what we do is have, say, the Nature Conservancy. I just have to use a group's name to make it real. Ask for LOHC money, and they get it, and they now have the land themselves. They pay property taxes, which solves your property tax problem, but they say no hunting or fishing on this land. And so the taxpayers who are wanted this land for things like hunting and fishing, and I don't think that should be exclusive, but they, that was one of the aims of the land. Now, don't have that opportunity. It's almost like held in private hands, and the very folks who paid for it don't have use of it. That's what I worry about, is an unintended consequence. Do you see that?
Representative Gaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Wagenius, I haven't thought about that. It's up to the legislature to decide how the legacy dollars are dispersed, and should they give them to nonprofit organizations that buy land then and with the expressed desire or the outcome that is perceived and understood going in the future to keep people off that land? It seems to me that that's in direct conflict with the legacy amendment as established to begin with, which was to provide the ability for people to enjoy their resources while protecting and enhancing them.
Quickly, Representative Wagenius, go ahead.
Well, I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that says that people have to be able to go on the land. So that's if the land were bought and maintained wonderfully as a preserve, we always have to look at the law of unintended consequences when we're aiming for something, and that's the one that comes to mind for me.
Thank you. Representative Gaskowski, any closing comments on your bill?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any comments at this point. Mr. Hilgert is prepared to make comments. How are we on time, Mr. Chair?
Not very good.
We're done. Okay. And I'm sure
he won't be offended. Taxes.
And he won't be offended, Mr. Chair.
I know he won't.
I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for the good discussion on this bill. I have made notes of Representative Hansen's comments and a mental note of Representative Wagenius' comments on this, and we'll continue to work on it going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gaskowski, and to Mr. Hilgert and Larson. We can continue this conversation. I appreciate you being here, and I think I know how you stand on this, and I think the committee does too. So with that, I'll renew my motion to move House File 586 as amended to be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? You're on your way to taxes, Representative Gaskowski. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, copy. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have we killed the bill yet this year?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, next we have Representative Uglem with House File 710. Representative Uglem, would you, you have a... Would you like to move your bill with the recommended... The motion would be to re-refer House File 710 to Legacy Finance Committee.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. And yes, this is House File 710. This is the legacy bill, which we've already talked a little bit about. And yes, I would like to move House File 710 to be referred to the Legacy Committee.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to do the amendment. So the bill's before the committee members, and now the author has a technical amendment, the A3.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to move the A3. It's just a small technical amendment with, on page 18, line 16, delete 15, insert 20.
Thank you. You've heard the amendment. Members, all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Representative Uglem, we have the bill in the form that you would like it. Proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Of course, this is the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council bill, House File 710. It's the eighth annual appropriation that has been dictated by the constitutional amendment, which passed with overwhelming majorities. Much has been said, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, much has been said about the direction of this bill and the land acquisitions that have occurred over the last 8 years. I would like to also say that I feel strongly that perhaps the bill over the years has morphed too much towards land acquisition and not enough towards restoration and enhancement. And I certainly do share the feelings of many of our outstate legislators and the effect it has had on the tax base, as we've just seen with Representative Draskowski's bill. Be that as it may, this bill is a very, very good bill for the environment. It provides lots of projects for many hunters and fishermen, for Bowser, for the DNR, for our local watershed districts. And I have Mark Johnson, who is the executive director of the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, to go over the bill in detail, and we will be happy to answer any questions you have. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, please identify yourself for the record and who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Mark Johnson. I'm the executive director for the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. Also, for the record,
excuse me, just a minute. Members? So we got their phone near the mic? Okay, proceed, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
Just in case, I'll power down my phone, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
I don't think it was that. Let's see. Also, for the record, Mr. Chair, with me is the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council's assistant director, Joe Pavelko. So he's here to provide some support for us as we need for questions. Mr. Chair and members, in your packets, you have, of course, the bill. You also have two handouts from the Outdoor Heritage Council with regards to the bill. So I'll give a little bit of overview of those, first of all, and then we'll go into the bill for a brief overview of the bill. First of all, we have at the front end the highlights for the bill. Basically, it's the there are 33 proposals recommended for funding within the bill for a total of $103.978 million. 72,769 acres of wildlife habitat throughout the state are estimated to be worked on, either restored, enhanced, or protected. And for those of you who I think most of you know, but just in case you don't, protected is what encompasses fee acquisition, or whether with or without PILT, and it also encompasses the purchase of conservation easements. 101 miles of shoreline is anticipated for, to be restored, enhanced, or protected. There's an estimation of $68 million in federal, state, or private conservation funds that will be leveraged by these funds. Also, 18 organizations are recommended for funding. It gives a breakdown of those there. The continued investment, there are 88% of the projects in here are ongoing programs, ones that have had phases previously. So anytime through the bill you see phase 2, phase 9, those are what I'm talking about. And, of course, the activities include everything from native prairie restoration and protection to wetland, trout stream enhancements, public land enhancements, etc. On the inside of this handout, you'll see in the middle on the top of the page, there's a picture of the state with different ecological reasons, regions or ecological zones, we'll say, listed. The northern forest in the upper right, the prairie in the lower west, and so on. That's just how the council reviews each of the projects and how they're broken down into the bill as well. From an, on the left side of the so it'd be page 2 of the handout, the left side of the interior is the outputs from an acreage standpoint, and on the right side, the whole right half of the page is those outputs from a funding standpoint, how it breaks down. I won't go into those in detail for you. You may have questions as we move on. The back of the page, back of the handout, is the summary of the different projects that are listed in the bill. The other thing, the other handout you have, is a picture of the state or a map of the state with a bunch of orange, brown, or pardon me, red, brown, and green dots on it. The green dots, these are, we were asked to put together this map, and it shows the potential acquisitions across the state through this bill. Now, there's a bit of a misnomer here because within each one of the acquisition or each one of the proposals, they put together parcel lists. And those parcel lists are potential parcels that may be purchased, be it in fee or with easement within the bill. These dots actually actually represent a total of 73,842 acres, but those are not what are going to be purchased. Of that, the anticipation is for a total purchase in fee of, let's see, fee with tilt, 4,254 acres, fee without tilt,6,551 acres, and easements, 13,460 acres. So the we're looking at a total of, what do we have? Of all the different types of acquisition, a maximum of 24,000 acres, this shows 73,000, so you can figure about two-thirds of these dots will not happen. With that, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions, I'll move forward into the bill.
Representative Green. I'm trying to look through this quickly, but can you just give me a quick breakdown? We've got approximately a little over 11,000 acres of land that you're purchasing. We got 72,000 acres total, and can you tell me, is it more cost effective to enhance these lands that we already have, or to buy more? Because we're spending a lot of money on land, and all we're hearing is that we don't have money to take care of the land that we have. And that's one question for you.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, good question. Actually, it's always easier to maintain or to improve than it is, I shouldn't say easier. It's always more cost effective, should I say, to maintain rather than purchase or protect in this case. The only thing is that if you have a native prairie that somebody else owns that's degrading and you don't purchase it, you don't have any say on whether that's maintained or brought back to status.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just going to ask one more and then we can move on. I see all the time, I hear all the time, DNR doesn't purchase any land that they're not paying tilt on. But I always see protect and fee without tilt. Can you explain that to me?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, again, very good question. Fee without tilt or non-tilt lands are actually lands that go back to ownership of a, instead of the DNR, they go back to county ownership or federal government ownership or local government ownership, some other ownership other than DNR. They may actually be held by a nonprofit, and in that case, with regards to the OHF funds, the council will make sure that the nonprofit will continue to pay property taxes on those properties.
Follow up?
Okay.
Anybody else?
Proceed with your testimony, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, we'll go through the bill from a higher level standpoint. I'll just go by sections and give you a quick overview, very quick overview, and then we'll see if there are questions. The starting on section 2 of the bill, of course, this is the total appropriation of $103.978 million in the first year of the fiscal year 2018. In 2019, we're looking at $585,000. That's the basically administrative budget for the next fiscal. If we look at subdivision 2, it's the Prairies subdivision. And very quickly, there are 10 program appropriations. Actually, those are all listed also on the back of your handout that we handed out earlier. So if you want to get a quick view of them without paging through. But those of those 10, they all concentrate on the Prairie region, which is generally the western edge of the state, southern Minnesota, especially to the west and the southwest. The all 10 are ongoing phases or repeat phases of previously successful programs. If you move to line 7.16 on page 7, that gets us into subdivision 3, which is the forest subsection or subdivision. And within this subdivision, there are 7 program recommendations for funding. All of those focus on forests, naturally, forests being anywhere from the northern forest in the north and northeast portion of the state on down through the metro and down into southeastern Minnesota. Going to on page 10, we'll run to subdivision 4, and that's the wetlands portion. So, in other words, all the projects, again, dealing with wetlands specifically. There are 6 program recommendations in this subsection. They all deal with wetlands, shallow lakes, shoreline-type acquisitions, restorations, or enhancements. And then subdivision 5 starts on line 12.26, and that's the habitat subdivision, which has a total. I'm sorry, I didn't mention the totals on these, but this one has a total of $26,554,000 in this subdivision. There are 10 program recommendations here. 7 of those are repeat phases. 3 of those are new projects. And the noteworthy, I think, is the very last one of these is the CPL program. There are a lot of questions. That's the small grants program. That's kind of an anomaly compared to all the others because it's the only small grants program in this. Subdivision 6 starts on line 17.24. That's the administrative subdivision, which comes to $879,000 in the first year and $585,000 in the second year. And that breaks down into, of course, the contracts management, and that money goes to DNR because they manage the contracts. Money going to for the LSOHC administrative budget is 6B, and that goes to LCC. And then 6C is the technical evaluation panel. That money goes to DNR because they do those evaluations each year to make sure the right work is being done for restorations and enhancements. 6D is the legacy website, and that's going to the legacy to LCC for payment or helping pay for our portion of the legacy website itself that LCC manages. Subdivision 7 goes into the appropriation availability and just spells that out. Subdivision 8 actually works through the payment conditions and the capital equipment expenditures requirements within the bill and to all the recipients. Subdivision 9 is the mapping requirement so that we make sure that we know where the lands are happening, so every recipient must provide those mappings or mapping details for us and GIS coordinates, etc. We get into Section 3 of the bill, which is actually the first of I believe, 4 amendments. And Subdivision 3 deals with 97A.056, Subdivision 22, which would be a new subdivision called Revenues. And actually, this would be on the, I don't turn to it now, but the very last page of your, am I going too fast, Mr.
Nope.
Chair? Okay. There is a repealer that correlates to this at the very end of the bill, so we'll get into that after a minute here. But this revenues language is basically I don't want to say a correction, but it's a betterment of previous revenues language. What it does is it details revenue disclosure and use requirements so that all revenues generated from OHF or from Outdoor Heritage Fund acquired lands are actually disclosed and they're used properly. And this was, of course, done in collaboration. The council asked for collaboration with House and Senate legal staff to help get this language in order. For Section 6, I'm sorry, I'm on line 21.23 right now. This and the two following amendments, you're going to see all three deal with Bowser. And they're all with regard to the CREP, the new federal CREP dollars that are going to be coming in. So this is, if you turn to line 24.2, you'll see the actual language, or that's where we start, subdivision F. It has the includes the language itself. 24.28 is the change here. It's moving 70. It's changing the amount of amount of money allowable for monitoring and enforcement of Bowser easements, changing it from $72,500 to $728,000. So that sounds like a tremendous change. The reason is, if I can summarize this, and you can ask for Bowser for further information if you wish, the CREP dollars can't be used for monitoring enforcement. They can be used for purchasing the easements. So within this match and leverage between the CREP dollars and the Author Heritage Fund dollars, the way to provide those extra purchases and provide the monitoring enforcement is use the OHF dollars for the monitoring and enforcement. So this is actually just a change in law that allows that to happen. It's a budget shift. The same type of, if we go to line 27.6 is the next amendment, and it's another portion of, actually, it's laws of 2016, Chapter 172. The same type of thing happens here, and the amendment wording, the change, is actually on line 30.15. And you can see that changes that, again, a fairly dramatic change, but it allows the budget shift from $130,000 to a little over $1 million. And the third one, which I mentioned, is under Section 6, which starts on line 32.25, and the actual language change would be on line 33.21, changing from $195,000 to $410,000. Those are all three Bowser, our previous Bowser appropriations. And finally, Mr. Chair, on the very last, page 34 would be line 34.23, we have a repealer of the old revenues language, which would be subdivision 8 of 97.8.056, and that old language is listed on the appendix on the back page. Mr. Chair, I can go through things more in detail, but or stand for your questions, whatever your pleasure would be.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two different questions. One is, as we're talking about more maintenance, one of the best maintenance things for the prairies is to burn. Do you have an estimate of how many acres will be burned with the dollars in this bill each year?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Venius, I'm looking for a reference here. I don't have, maybe Joe can find something. I don't have the acres that would be burned each year, but I can tell you that within one of the projects alone, Grasslands projects, pardon me as I find it here. Oops. Within one of the projects alone, which is DNR, here we go, actually it would be 2I, that project alone is Accelerated Prairie Restoration and Enhancement of DNR Lands. That actually will be manipulating, part of it through burns, part of it through hand manipulation, such as, the individuals going out, but a lot of it through burning, actually, about 30,000 acres, 30,170 acres for that program alone. And Greg Holt is the program manager with DNR for that.
Professor Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would be good to have some perspective of what portion that needs to be burned is actually being burned for management, because that is one of the places we're falling far behind. I know people over have been asking about maintenance, and that's one of the things that where it seems that we're falling behind. So it would be good to have a sense of proportion and of those dollars. But my other isn't so much a question as a major concern about the easements in this bill. We are not set up so that there is anybody who can review an easement before it's actually signed. And so we sometimes are not getting our money's worth because we don't have a structure or any kind of protocol where anybody reads easements. So I've had an opportunity on LCCMR to read some easements after they were signed, and state's not getting its money's worth. There are odd things in easements where it looks like the state is getting something, and you read three pages later, and that's taken away. And we, Mr. Chair, I think really need to look into that issue, because I don't know whether we're getting our money's worth for any of these easements, because I've only had an opportunity to read some, but every one of them that I have read has real questions in terms of what we're getting, what bang we're getting for our buck. So I think we need to spend some time on that, look at our protocols on that. Somebody's got to read them and say, are we getting value for our money?
Thank you. Mr. Johnson, I'm sure that you can make those easements available to Representative Wagenius.
Yes, sir, we can.
Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to read these easements. We've got to have somebody else to read these easements.
Representative Clark, you want to read these easements?
It probably should not.
No, I understand. I know where you're going, but yes, I understand what you're saying, but I wanted Mr. Johnson on the record to make sure that they do have easements and so forth, and they can be made available to some smart people. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question's on the repealer and the revenues. Of, and it looks like it's going back to subdivision 20, section 3 on page 21, and I just wanted to highlight or maybe have you go over that section again or what the repealer does, because I think when the repealer language was originally passed, the intent was transparency to make sure that if an entity purchased the land and then, let's say, they cropped it for 3 or 4 years before they restored it, or if they were grazing or having those revenues. So does the language on page 21 still provide the transparency for the public that the repealed language does? Can we see, can Minnesotans see if, with that holding, that if there's revenue being generated by an entity that's using public dollars to purchase the land?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, thanks for that question. Yes, this actually provides more transparency, I believe. The reason, the impetus for this is we had a group come to us, actually it's Pheasants Forever, who said in the early years before the last slight amendment was made to Subdivision 8, they had had been doing restoration of land that was going to be turned into WMA. And, of course, as you mentioned, that often, it almost always, is doing some farming on land to make sure they control the weeds and set the base for the new native species that then go in. Because of weather, whatever circumstance, or but generally because of weather, often, sometimes, there's another year of farming that's necessary because you just can't get in it to do the right thing or do the, what you want to do. And that provides another year of revenue. And they were saying, we'd like more direction on how this revenue needs to be used. Because with the federal regulations, there is more direction. So this brings us more in line with the federal-type regulations that are attached to federal money, which provides more transparency. And it's of all types of revenue. It also is prescriptive in saying that it can be used for further use in that the vein of the appropriation, or it has to be returned to the fund.
Representative Hansen, you're good? Okay. Okay, so we've got a couple of, or another person at least on the list here that wants to testify. Do you have anything else you want to touch on with regards to the bill, Mr. Johnson or Representative Ublom?
before we bring down Jim. Is it Bizat? Excuse me if I have your name incorrect.
Mr. Chair, I yep. don't have any more comments.
Okay, thank you. Jim? Welcome. I'm sorry that chair sits so low.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Bizat. I am the Vice President of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. The reason that I'm here this morning is to add MOHA's support to the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council appropriations as submitted.
Wow, that's short. Thank you. Anything else? Yep. So, Representative, we have another amendment here, the A1 amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd move the A1 amendment. Members, I think we've talked previously about clauses that are put in that may have a screening effect on the opportunity for people to apply, and I think the A1 amendment would be a very small step on making improvements there. So I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Excuse me, Representative Hoppe. Representative Uglum was first, okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would support the A1 amendment as Thank written.
You. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen or Representative Uglum, where is Carnelian Creek and why do we not want to allow hunting there? And maybe the answer to the first will answer the second.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hoppe, this is a Washington County project and it's an easement. And I think this would be a precedent-setting thing of requiring hunting on easements in the metro area. It would be another screen that is put on that would have the effect of preventing easements from purchase.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish.
Oh, Mr. Chair, so this wouldn't be a slippery slope letting PETA or the Humane Society try to shut off hunting down the line.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cornish, no, this is actually, I believe, preventing a slippery slope the other way, where right now, in the 8 years we've been doing this, we haven't put, I'm using we here broadly, but we haven't put this restriction on easements. There's been a fee title issue, but not on easements. So by doing this, then we're setting that, and there are places where you can restore a forest or you can protect a wetland or enhance a prairie for their own sake and for fish, game, and wildlife habitat. But it may be through an easement that's in an urbanizing area or in another area where you could fish but not hunt, or maybe you can hunt but not angle.
Okay, thank you.
So, members, just for a point of clarification here, and I have the utmost confidence and respect for all the members sitting here, but Ms. Taylor, would you kind of walk us through the amendment and give us your insight, please?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, the A1 amendment, there's actually two pieces to it. The first line is 1.2 and 1.3. If you look on Section 7, that's dealing with what Representative Hansen was stating about the one project. It would remove the requirement to have an annual public hunting and fishing plan, which would be a new requirement for easements that has not been done in the past. And then if you go to page 16, the last two lines of the amendment, this deals with the Conservation Partners Program. And currently the language says that any acquisitions need to be open to public hunting and fishing unless otherwise provided by law, which is also required under statute and the Constitution. And this would just change the must to may. But given that we have a constitutional requirement and a statutory requirement, I don't think the effect of that, there's much effect to that particular part of the amendment.
Thank you. Is that helpful, members? Okay. Any other comments on the A1 amendment? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment's adopted. Okay, so to the bill. This is a public meeting. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify in favor of or in opposition to the bill? Okay. So with that, Representative Uglem, your closing comments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is a good bill. We know it's a little controversial from all the testimony that we've had over the years, but taken as a whole, this is a great bill for the environment, and I think fulfills the intent of the voters and the constitutional amendment. We all probably feel maybe we could do a little bit better on the restoration part and the enhancement part in future bills, and I'm sure that the Lessard Sam's Council has heard our concerns. But that being said, Mr. Chair, I would like to renew my motion for House File 710 to be affirmed here in this committee as amended and moved to the Legacy Committee.
Thank you. With that, all those in favor of the motion before us, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill is on its way to the Legacy Committee. Thank you, Representative Uglem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything else for the benefit of the group? Tomorrow, the Mining Committee, the Subcommittee meets, and then on Thursday, we've got a regularly scheduled meeting. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so just...
Members, right, please.
The entire committee does not have to be here tomorrow, and on Thursday, we will be passing a bill out. Is that the intent, or we're just going to hear?
Yes. Yep. Thursday. Yep. Okay. Thursday we're doing the wetland bank bill. Okay. Yes. And then we'll start a DNR overview.
And Mr. Chair, and I think we had this a little bit of conversation yesterday on the floor, but if we appropriate money before you have your target, so let's say I'm using we here again broadly because that doesn't necessarily mean support, but if there's an appropriation of general fund on Thursday of $5 million, that and you get a target that doesn't increase, then we have to find that $5 million out of PCA general fund budget or DNR general fund budget or Bowser general fund. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're going to have to find. I mean, I don't know what our target is at this point. We're going to have to see, but that's a part of the roadmap. I don't know exactly how it's going to unfold, but we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it. Anything else, members? Okay. With that, we're adjourned.